Have you or your loved ones ever experienced change of any kind? Ever?
Oh, yeah.
Ever had a growth spurt? Made a friend? Ate a sandwich? Seen a rainbow? Taken a lover? Visited the gym?
Hey, bro.
If you answered yes to any of these life changes, call itbed.com. ItBed by Sleep Number. It's a bed that changes, invented because your bed doesn't change.
Please do not actually call the itbed.com website because it's not possible to call a website.
Blog Talk Radio.
Biting your tongue, you've spent a lifetime stuck in silence, afraid that you'll say something wrong. If no one ever hears it, how we gonna learn your song? So come on, come on, come on, come on. You got a heart as loud as lions, so why let your voice be tame? Maybe we're a little different. There's no need to be ashamed. You got the light to fight the shadows, so stop hiding it away. Come on, come on. Read all about it, read all about it, it all.
Hello and welcome to this week's broadcast of Becoming a Cosmic Citizen with Don Daniels and Sierra Noblina. Today is Monday, January 12, 2015. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks for listening to Galactic U Radio Network. If you like our content, make sure to go to the homepage and click follow and you get updates on all our upcoming shows. And today is our second week with Becoming a Cosmic Citizen, but we're going to just now start to get into the work of it. Last week we talked about the show, created it, and talked about the direction and so on. So go ahead and bring on the other wonderful host of this radio program, Don Daniels. Hi, Don.
Good evening, Sierra.
So just to give everybody just a little bit of a background, I'm currently in Colorado Springs with my grandmother on my biological side, who is actively passing. And so I'm a little bit distracted, but I am very much present with my consciousness and the direction and flow of what we're creating here still for this show. I thought it was very important for us to have this show tonight. And so I'm taking the time to be with all of you for the show. And so we're going to create a really great program. Don, would you like to tell us the outline of what we're going to do? I'd like to also mention to folks that this is a course in Ascension, and you can read in our show page outline what we've put there. But it's an ongoing conversation based on a book that Don Daniels wrote, Evolution Through Contact, Becoming a Cosmic Citizen. And you don't have to have the book, but it would be great if you could read and follow along with the conversation. But we'll take each week practical chapters, different chapters that we'll let you all know about. We'll have conversation, discussion around it, review the chapters. Before we get into consecutive weeks, what I wanted to point out was if you missed a program live, say this week, and you're listening in the archives and you have a question about the content that we're discussing or there's something you want to share pertaining to what we're discussing, you've had your own contact experience and so on, you can call in and put your hand up at the beginning of the radio program each week, and we will take those questions. We will go over the previous week, and then we'll get into the content and so on. So don't worry if you don't get a program live. You can always call in at the beginning of the following program or whenever you can and ask us that question or share that experience. So, Don, at this point, I'm just going to kind of be back here. I'll be here with you. I'll participate in the conversation as we create it. So, but I'm going to let you go ahead and take lead on the structure.
Okay, well, tonight, just kind of a general outline, we're going to talk about my first UFO encounter, how we prepared for it, how it happened, what were the physiological and psychological responses and how the preparation helped us handle the high strangeness. We're going to encourage listeners to call in with their own encounters, whether it's UFO, ET, or some other form of high strangeness. We find it's very healing just to be able to talk about it, not only for you, but for other listeners who may not have found the courage to speak about their experiences yet. Just hearing that they're not alone is very healing to them, so you can help other people too. We're going to talk about the media, how the media has been used to try and shape public perception, and what some of the different movies, both good and bad, have been about, what their agenda may have been, and how they've affected you. And then we're going to talk about a little bit about the physics of UFOs, how they seem to be able to do instantaneous turns, stops, etc., fly through solid ground, why they sometimes show up on photos when they weren't visible to the naked eye. And then we're going to wrap up with a meditation, just a very basic breathing meditation. For those who don't have any experience with meditation, we'll talk a little bit about why meditation is beneficial, the health benefits, the psychological benefits, etc., and also the development of your spiritual growth. So we'll kind of wrap up with the meditation and an overview of what's coming next week, which is going to be more about how our childhood development affected our readiness for encounters, whether it was positive and supportive towards peaceful encounters, or whether that implanted you with impressions that may be an obstacle to you having peaceful contact. And we'll talk about through the course how to work through some of those impressions that you may have got from some of the negative movies, and how to get yourself prepared so you can handle contact with courage and joy. So, Sierra, you got anything to add right at the moment?
Yeah, I'm really happy that we're going to be talking about a couple of these different aspects. I think everything that you've mentioned, from how do they go through solid walls to, you know, some of the basic stuff we're going to cover today, or some, you know, questions that just anybody would have about how they operate and such. But I'm particularly interested and happy that we're going to be addressing ETs in the media and how some of that can be fed negatively. And, you know, of course, I'll be able to share my experience on a couple of those things. But I'm glad that we're tackling these topics, really. So I'm excited.
Okay. Well, I guess I should launch right into my first encounter. Back in 1999, gosh, how time flies. It's all nonlinear in the higher dimensions anyway.
Exactly.
Dr. Stephen Greer was doing a talk up here in Evergreen, and I saw a little ad in the newspaper. My wife pointed it out and said, oh, that sounds interesting. And I got home from a trip. I was dog-dead tired, and my wife reminded me, oh, that meeting's tonight. So I ran down to the lake house and heard him talking, and so many things that I'd been trying to put together for years. It just didn't quite make sense. All of a sudden, fit. One of the primary things was, why the secrecy? You know, I'd been trying to figure out, why does the government try and keep all this secret? And he pointed out that UFOs don't go zipping around the universe burning X on Jet A. All of a sudden, I said, aha. Because if we had their energy and propulsion technologies, we would not need the fossil fuels. And the more I've researched over the years, the more I've learned that we haven't needed fossil fuels for at least 50 or 60 years, and probably since the early 1900s from the time of Tesla. But
that's right.
There's people that control those fossil fuels and stand to make huge money from it, and they're not above polluting the planet to death for their own personal profit. So that is one of the main reasons, and actually the government, a lot of it depends on how you define government, because behind the scenes there's a secret government that really controls a lot of the agenda, and the president himself may not even know. Jimmy Carter, when he became president, he had made a promise that he would find out what the government knew about UFOs and release it to the public. Well, he found out that they did not necessarily allow him to know that. He went to the CIA and asked the CIA director what they knew about the UFOs, and the CIA director basically told him, you don't have a need to know, and brushed him off. Any guesses who that CIA director was at that time when Jimmy Carter became president?
Edgar Hoover?
No. After that.
Oh.
George H.W. Bush.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I saw that one coming.
Yeah. So anyway, after Jimmy Carter served as president, he was actually out on a book tour. One of the people that was getting their book signed asked him about you know, why he wasn't able to release any of the information about UFOs. And Jimmy Carter, almost with tears in his eyes, said, I guess my security clearance wasn't high enough.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, we have multiple levels of government, and some act as entities unto themselves, above the law, above oversight, and really it becomes kind of a global corporatocracy that controls a lot of the information on this subject. But we're going to blow some of that wide open during this course. So after this presentation by Dr. Greer, I knew I had to go to their Ambassador to the Universe training. And I was trying to get all the stuff together, trying to get the days off, etc. And we'll talk about that in a little later session when we talk about creative manifestation. But anyway, I got the days off I needed and got everything together, went down there. And they had sent out a package with a lot of information to read beforehand. And so there was a lot of position papers, some of which you can get for free on the CSETI website, CSETI.org or DisclosureProject.org. There's a bunch of his position papers, many of which are still very good. And I'd been studying a lot on some of that stuff and got down there to Crestone. And we had our first, you know, kind of afternoon get-together and dinner and a brief introduction of what we were going to do. And then it was time to head out into the field. And so we did. We headed out into the Baca, the high desert, and set up a circle. And Sierra can probably tell you why a circle is sacred. In addition to everybody being equal, no head of the table, but everybody's equal, we also have eyes looking in all directions so that anything that happens in any direction, somebody will see it and point it out to the group.
So it also keeps the energy coherent and easier for the galactics to read as a whole in a circle.
Mm-hmm. So very early in the evening, actually, there was a meteor, in air quotes, came streaking in down in the southwest, but it didn't look quite like a meteor. It looked to me more like a smudgy energy streak rather than a point with a tail spreading out behind it, and it really caught my eye. It's been a little different. And then it just stopped instantly, just instant stop about 20 degrees above the horizon out in the southwest. And it was instantly a big blue-white light, bigger and brighter than Venus. And I kind of stated the obvious. I said, that's no meteor. And, you know, some of the people that were facing the other way didn't see the initial arrival, but everybody was looking at it now. Dr. Gert took his laser pointer and went flash, flash towards the object. And the object went flash, flash back at us, matched the pattern. And I said, cool. And then somebody picked up a million candle power spotlight and went, flash, flash, and the object, flash, flash, just matched the pattern. And, you know, being an airline pilot, I knew more about what this meant than probably most people would pick up on immediately. We sometimes do it at night when we're flying. We see another airplane, we'll flash our landing light at them. And if they flash back, we know they've seen us, we see them. It's a subtle, nonverbal form of communication where we say, hi, I see you, and, you know, I'm watching out for you. So what we had done was we had basically said hi, and they had said hi back. We had established a rudimentary form of nonverbal communication with the craft, which is pretty profound. It's much better than just passively observing a craft come by. And so I was just about to suggest that we try a prime number pattern. Prime numbers are numbers that can only be divided by 1 in themselves, so like 1, 2, 3, 5, 7, 11, 13, 17. So I was going to suggest that we start a prime number pattern, and we've got the obvious to what the pattern was. Then we would pause, see if they would do the next number. We'd do the number after that, see if we could start to alternate numbers. That would definitely indicate higher intelligence. But before I could even suggest that, this pale blue-white spotlight came down out of the craft on our group. There were 18 of us there. We had university professors, scientists, medical doctors, airline pilots, etc. Mostly professionals in the group, actually. And this spotlight hit our group. It wasn't real bright, but it was bright enough that everybody saw it. And then you could see, about half of us could see a subtle scan line go through it, like on Star Trek when the bridge gets scanned. But that's red. This was pale blue, you know, close, plenty close enough. So the spotlight hits us, the scan line goes through it, and then probably the weirdest part was the spotlight retracted back into the craft. It got shorter. It didn't just shut off like when we shut off a searchlight. It retracted. It got shorter and sucked back into the craft. I have no idea how they did that. But anyway, at that point, I just said, cool, we've just been scanned. It was so obvious. And then I started thinking, well, you know, right about now, they probably know more about me than I know about me, which, you know, could be a little intimidating if you had something to hide, if you had an ulterior motive, if you wanted to, say, get their anti-gravity technology so you could be the next Henry Ford and, you know, have an exclusive on anti-gravity sportabouts for the whole planet or something like that. You know, if your objective was to become rich from some information, then, you know, they would know that, and they don't play that game. But since our intentions were pure, I was out there to learn to be an ambassador to the universe, a citizen ambassador, since we don't have any government ambassadors to the, at least publicly acknowledged ambassadors to the galactics. I didn't find it all that intimidating. It was just, you know, kind of, wow. You know, it's like if you've ever been in an earthquake, and I've been in some doozies. I was in the 1989 earthquake in the San Francisco Bay Area, the World Series earthquake. I was across the bay in Alameda when that one happened, and it was a pretty good shaker. But even though intellectually you know earthquakes happen, you kind of take the ground for granted as being granite, as being very solid beneath your feet. And when it shakes violently beneath you, it shakes up your paradigm. Psychologically, it shakes you up just a little bit and makes you kind of re-examine a lot of your conceptions about life and what everything's all about. So this was very much like that. It was, you know, I'd been reading about UFOs since I was a kid. I'd been interested. I was pretty sure they were real from my research. But when it actually happens, it just kicks it up a whole notch. It just shakes up your paradigm just a little bit. So that night I was just having a hard time getting to sleep. The BBs were bouncing around pretty rapidly inside the brain cavity. And, you know, I was going over all kinds of things like, you know, is this real or were we just deluding ourselves? Well, if we were deluding ourselves, it was a mass delusion because 16 professionals all saw it. Nobody got any video of that one. It was pretty fast. It didn't last very long, but we do have others we have video of. But anyway, you know, just going over this, you know, in your mind, what is the possible explanation? The more I thought about it, the more the logical, straightforward explanation seemed to make the most sense, that it was a craft that had just come by to visit. You know, they probably, we do some things that attract them. We put out some radio signals. We do some consciousness, thought projection, remote viewing type of things that let them know that we're interested in contact. And they apparently picked up on that, and they came to say hi, which was pretty profound. So that was basically my first encounter, the preparation beforehand, understanding that at least the vast majority of the visitors are benevolent and here for our best interest was helpful. Some of the meditation techniques, which we'll get to in the course, are also very helpful in allowing you to remain calm during periods of high strangeness. So I think this would be a good time if there's anybody out there who has had any kind of similar experiences, whether it's a UFO or ET encounter or some other kind of high strangeness, raise your hand and chime in. Is there anybody on the board, Sierra?
Nobody has their hand up. We can go forward just a little bit, and if somebody puts their hand up, I'll let you know, Don.
Okay. Well, we were going to talk about the physiological effects. Just kind of a feeling of being a little off balance. Your whole paradigm has shifted. It's just kind of like after the earthquake. For the next several days, you're just a little bit numb. Some of what followed later in that week comes in later chapters, so I'd like to hold off on that just a little.
And I can say myself that I, even though I have had a lot of strangeness around me my entire life, being able to, well, being born and being very empathic and intuitive, and I had a lot of sensory perceptions that were open and stayed open through my life. And so for me, a great challenge when I was young adult and into even, you know, teens and early 20s was trying to distinguish if the person standing in front of me was actually solid or not.
Oh,
but appeared to be solid.
Huh?
Yeah, it really still sometimes. Then I started to learn how to open all my senses, pick up energetically, vibrationally, and empathics are intuitively like what they're thinking and, you know, emitting signal. And so it's easier and faster for me to categorize things when I come into contact with it. But I have to say the most disorienting experience I ever had. And I remember my experience was, I was starting to have some galactic energies work with me, and my situation is I had a stroke and died and was given the option to, well, was offered that somebody would take my place because of the damage that was done during the stroke as a walk-in, a replacement walk-in. And I said, no, it's not okay with me. What else can we do? And there was this bargain struck and agreements made for a braided walk-in, what all the different levels of training I would have to agree consciously to undergo to speed up my human aspect. And they thought that it would be a risk worth doing or taking on their end because I had already been awoken and was more practiced at the other psychic abilities and different things like that. So they thought, well, that'd be great. But there was a lot of lessons I had to learn, a lot of spaces I had to move through really quickly and in different ways. But I remember the very first time I felt the physical contact of a galactic being, it completely disoriented me physically. It was as if I was walking around in shock. Their physical presence is on such a different frequency. Either they're jumping over from a multiple timeline, like a different timeline, and phasing into our existence, or they're physically jumping through different things. And I've come to understand, and it's sort of like this decompression thing that the physical body has to experience to assimilate on a physical level something that it has no context for. And so that's where the kind of shocky feeling comes in, and a disorientating feeling type of a thing. So I just wanted to mention that even though I'd had all these other interactions with angels and people that were past and lower level energies and fairies and Bigfoot and all kinds of other stuff by the time I was like 12, being in physical contact, being the soul that I am in this physical body, having to have this physical body deal with the presence of a galactic being, it has a physical effect. And each one of us experiences that and expresses that differently. But what we want to do here is to prepare you and or if you've already had an experience, help you process through different levels of what's going on. Because sometimes, you know, I shared last week that Dawn really helped me during a couple phases of this integration period of having just working with my own human aspect to accept everything that was going on in my life. And there was some practices that we needed to put into place, which we're going to share with you as we go on. But the reason why Dawn appealed so much to me is because he's got a really practical way and a great way of applying practical things like practices. That's what I should say, practices to help you integrate and assimilate these types of energies. So I just want to share it.
Okay. Well, one thing I noticed during my upbringing, I guess you could call it, on this level was the more I prepared and the more I was ready for, the more they gave me to experience, the more high strangeness I started to encounter.
Yes.
But they seem to be very cognizant of our readiness, and they don't want to push us too far to where it freaks us out or causes any psychological harm. So as you're going through the practices that we're going to present to you and are starting to ask for your own contact experiences, know that they will only come as far as you're comfortable. And so if you reach kind of a plateau where things aren't changing much, you got to look inward and start to examine, okay, what might my roadblocks be? Is there some experience from my childhood, some movie I watched that's causing some little fear, maybe even back in the subconscious mind? And start to clean up all that debris. And as you make the next leap in your progress, the next higher level of contact event or whatever will start to occur. It'll come at the rate that you're ready for it, if you're asking for it. One of the things that we were going to talk about was the way the PSYOPs, psychological warfare efforts, were developed clear back in the 40s and 50s to keep people from talking about these kind of events. I guess originally there was, well, we'll be generous here. It was back in the 40s or early 50s, the Rand Institute put out a study saying that if people became aware that there were other beings in the universe, that we were not alone, that people would freak out, jump out of windows, etc. And the government elected to try and keep this secret. Well, one way to keep it secret is to ridicule anybody who does talk about it, to where other people get the impression that, oh, they're just crazy, and, you know, if I talk about my experience, they'll label me as crazy. Whether or not they think the other person is crazy, they're afraid that they'll be labeled as crazy. Pilots especially, this is an area that I'm a little sensitive to, are generally high-quality witnesses. They're professionals. They're highly trained. They look at the sky all the time. They know how to identify different types of aircraft. And for them to say, you know, with high credibility and with good detail, that they saw something that's not of the, at least the, our known inventory of aircraft, that would get some attention. So what they did was they very carefully set up psychological operations to discredit any of the pilots who talked about it and to basically threaten them. There were several levels. First, they would kind of ridicule you. If that didn't work, they'd send in the team that would threaten you. And if things were too out of hand, or if somebody was talking especially about some of the new energy technologies that they did not want out, if you wouldn't shut up, then there was a team that came in to eliminate you. In one way or another, you'd have a mysterious accident, commit suicide, get bumped off the highway, whatever. Just as an example, one of the guys who came to one of our CSETI outings was an airline pilot. Before that, he'd been a bomber pilot in the Air Force, and he was in the first bomber wing that started carrying nukes after World War II. And I think it was B-47s he was flying. And when they started carrying the nuclear warheads, almost everybody in the squadron had UFO encounters while they were flying. And in his case, and it was pretty typical, this craft came in and took up formation with him just a few hundred yards away, off to the left of his nose, or I can't remember which side first, but it doesn't really matter, but off to one side of the nose, and was just pacing him. And he said it was like a cigar-shaped craft with no wings, no tail, no apparent engines, just kind of a cylinder, a little bit tapered on the ends. And it paced them for a while. He said he'd heard enough stories from his buddies that he wasn't all that scared about it. He'd climb a little bit, he'd descend a little bit, he'd turn gently. This thing just held position no matter what he did. And then it jumped over to the other side of the nose and did the same thing. And he maneuvered, and it just maneuvered right with him. And then it took off. Well, when the squadron started having these kind of encounters, the commanding officers told them that if that happens, they're supposed to file a report. Well, the first few crews that did file a report, they go in, and it's like an 80-page report. Page 1 was what happened. Page 2 through 80 was a psychological profile on the pilot, his family, his parents, etc., the whole thing. And then they used that to ridicule the pilots. They would also break the crews up and send them to far-flung bases like Adak, Alaska, and Thule, Greenland, and stuff. They'd split them up, and their career would go flatline. They'd never get a promotion. And so pretty quick it became apparent that the real objective of these reports was to keep people from making reports. And he said even to this day, well, he saw the Disclosure Project presentation on the Internet, the one we did at the National Press Club back May 9th, 2001. And he said, aha, somebody I can talk to. And he came to the CSETI outing, and it was, well into the week, almost through the week, that he finally opened up, said, okay, I got a story to tell you, and get the cameras out because I want to record this for the archives. And he told us the story. But he said they were having their reunion, some big reunion of their bomber squadron, and he was trying to get them to, set up a room at the reunion with the cameras and have anybody who wanted to give their video testimony of what they had encountered, and nobody wanted to do it, even to this day. Nobody wanted to do it. They were afraid of getting trashed. So the psychological disincentives were very deliberate, very strong, and I think very harmful to the psyche of especially pilots and others who had encounters and were just encouraged to keep it inside. And when they keep something like that inside all their life, it just tears them up. This guy had been holding it inside for about 30 years. And when he kind of rammed up that story for us for the cameras and stuff, you could literally see the weight coming off his shoulders. His shoulders literally were lifting, rising as he told his story. It was very healing for him to finally be able to talk about it. So that's why we want you guys to chime in here, not only for your benefit, but for the benefit of all the other listeners. This program is supposed to be based on audience participation. That's a big part of it. So come on, guys. Well, let's talk a little bit about the media and how it's been used to manipulate public perception on the subject. The best we can tell, there's been an ongoing battle between the forces of light who are trying to put out a positive and thought-provoking movies and documentaries about the subject, and then the puppet masters of the world who desire to keep us in fear so they manipulate us like sheeple. There have been a number of movies on the genre, and we can talk about a few of them and what their objective was, as well as some of the TV programs and stuff over the years. Some of the good movies, in my opinion, were E.T., Close Encounters of the Third Kind, the original, not the remake, but the original of The Day the Earth Stood Still. And that, by the way, was actually a State Department white hat behind that when they were trying to get the public prepared for the announcement from the government, the disclosure that was supposed to come back in the 50s. This movie was a way of preparing the public, making them think about how they should react. If you watch the movie, and I highly recommend you watch that movie, that's probably one of my all-time favorites. It's a psychological study, different groups of people and how they might react. There were the scientists who were curious. There were the military who, you know, had the typical military response, guns drawn, etc. There was the general public. There was the lady who this guy encountered that helped him. And there were just a variety of different responses, and they examined the way these different groups evolved their reaction to the event of this extraterrestrial landing on Earth and coming to speak with us about, well, the main mission, the main message that he wanted to deliver was that we cannot continue with the pollution, burning the fossil fuels, etc., and we cannot continue with the warlike ways if we wish to continue to exist as a planetary civilization. And he was offering some better alternatives. So watch that movie again for the first time with the idea in mind that it is a psychological study, that it was being put out by the good guys at the State Department to try and prepare people psychologically for when they told the real story, the real truth. For just a fun one, and this is one of my favorite comedies of all time, it's called Spaced Invaders, S-P-A-C-E-D, Spaced Invaders. This was a group of Martians. They were out on asteroid patrol, probably because they were relatively incompetent, and the fleet was going off to invade the Arcturian system, so they put the antenna out. They're trying to get some news of what's going on, and they lock into a broadcast of War of the Worlds from Big Bean, Iowa. It happens to be Halloween night, and the local little radio station is broadcasting War of the Worlds for Halloween night. So they go, oh, it's a diversion. We're invading Earth. Let's go. And they proceed to head down to invade Earth all by themselves. And everybody thinks they're just kids in Halloween costumes, and it goes downhill from there. But it's a good one.
That sounds hilarious.
It is hilarious. And it's a good one for kids. There's nothing in there that, you know, it was actually a Buena Vista, which is a Disney subsidiary. You know, kids of all ages, it's good for them. And there's good messages in there about learning to get along, cooperate, understanding that we're all people, etc. I really enjoyed it, but it's also hysterical. If you're into the sci-fi genre, there's so many little inside jokes. In one case, they're standing out in the middle of this green field wearing these poofy caramel-colored outfits with great big dingle balls all over them. And they look at each other and said, do you suppose we selected the wrong camouflage?
Oh, my goodness.
You know, there's just stuff like that. And, you know, inside jokes on the whole sci-fi genre. So it's just a hysterical movie, but it's got a good message, too. Avatar, I enjoyed on some levels. It's very much a story of not only the European conquest, if we shall say, of the North American continent, but also the corporate conquest of, you know, the way they rape and pillage the planet for resources, et cetera. And, well, right now the indigenous people down in Ecuador have a lawsuit against Texaco, which has been bought by Chevron, so now it's against Chevron. And they actually won a round on that lawsuit, but Chevron insists on just kicking it up the chain of command. They said, we will fight this until hell freezes over, and then we'll fight it on the ice. Well, guess what? The CEO of Chevron just got called before an international war crimes tribunal. So...
Nice.
Maybe the people are starting to, maybe the people are starting to get some traction here, and that's a good thing. Another fun movie, but still with a good message, is Flight of the Navigator.
That's a great one.
Yeah. And it's also, just as a little side note, that's where Sarah Jessica Parker got her start. She's in that movie as a very young teenager. So it's kind of funny to see her there. Can you think of any other really good ones, Sierra, offhand?
Well, you know, I am a huge Marvel comic fan, and the fact that they are just going so far out with all of these awesome shows, you know, of course, I love the Star Trek shows, the new Star Trek that they've got. I really like the depth that they've brought to the storyline of Star Trek, and really that's the direction that our world is going into, becoming a galactic society, you know, interstellar society where we are traveling between here and the moon and here and Mars for sure. And I believe that there's a couple other bases on moons and planets that we have that right now in current day people are traveling to, human beings are traveling to. And I'll just actually just jump in here if I can and kind of insert this and drop a little bit about the radio program tomorrow night on A Galactic Perspective with Sierra Nablina. I'm I've got Captain K, a.k.a. Randy Kramer, who is a captain of the Mars Defense Force and Earth Defense Force, spent 17 years on Mars, and has been given the okay, the go-ahead by his superiors to start to expose or share about his experiences and talk about the technology like we touched on earlier. And that, and you were right on, Don, when you said that for about 50 or 60 years, we have had the technology of doing so many things, but we didn't get to have that technology. It was redirected to the breakaway society. And I'm not sure if we're going to go through and talk about the different levels of what happened with why we got there. I want to focus on some, for, you know, questions pertaining to some other things that he's not been asked in the many interviews that he's done. But it's really exciting that what we're talking to, what we're speaking to right now, is that there exists something like Stargate SG-1. There's a whole branch of people and a whole group of people who are terraforming and working hand in hand with the Martian people, the beings. Well, they're not humanoid, but it's a fascinating story. And we're just going to delve into a lot of things. But my point being is we've got the technology now, and it's interesting to listen to somebody who has come back from a Star Trek way of life to the planet as it is right now, and is he's flabbergasted and so upset that the people here don't have access to what the breakaway society type of a thing. So, you know, we have it. We just need to start implementing it here on the planet in our lifetime. And in a very short period of time, we're going to be traveling to the moon and to Mars, and you can choose to hang out and have your life based on Earth, or you can travel around if you want, you know. It takes all kinds of beings. You know, we don't all have to be out there in a spaceship.
I know somebody else who's got portal technology, and we'll talk about that later in the program. It's actually after the end of my book, and we'll work that in somewhere, too.
Perfect.
So, as far as some of the negative movies, Independence Day was an MJ-12 infomercial. While they were trying to get some other positive movies out that summer, they got cut off at the knees, they lost their funding, etc. They could not, the directors got threatened, etc. Independence Day, no expense was spared getting that out for July 4th, the year that it was released. And it was an MJ-12 infomercial. It was designed to create fear, designed to make us afraid of any contact so that they can control the whole paradigm. Battlefield Earth was another one. And, of course, your least favorite, probably The Fourth Kind. You want to talk a little bit about that movie?
Yeah.
How it affected you?
Oh, God. First of all, you know, since when The Fourth Kind that came out, what was it, 2010?
Yeah, and don't,
maybe?
And don't give away
Nine?
All of the stuff there about you that's coming
no.
up later. Just
No, I'm not going to.
But they can read
I've
ahead of
done people. A. Exactly. I've done a lot of work with people who have had contact, and I have to say a very few percentage of the people that I've worked with have had a negative imprint on their memory of their interaction with their galactic family. And I can also sort that out, that there are more people who might have had a memory, which Don alluded to at the beginning of this program, that was kind of stamped or imprinted on it to try to cover up. It's an old way of erasing a memory by mapping over something different on top. And that was more of the breakaway society, the groups that were working with the Zetas, the Greys, and the hybridization program that was in the 90s. And so I worked with most people have not had a really negative experience. It was something fleeting, like when you don't have a government-based program where they're taking and not telling people, which is what the government's been doing, our government's been doing for some time, the interaction with our galactic family is much, much different. And so when I went to see this movie, I went with Don and Joe.
Right.
Jeff Peckman joined us later that day. But this show was just so based in fear, and I was quite frankly really frustrated with the fact that they took quite a liberty with creating this whole thing around owls. As a Native American shaman, it just, not only did they take something sacred and just desecrate it by attaching it to something that has nothing to do with, they alluded that when people were about to have a contact, they would see these white owls with black eyes or these owls, and it was such a scary experience, and that was so harmful and disconnecting us, because everything around us is constantly communicating with us, including nature. And so as a Native American, I believe that the animals come to us and give us messages and stuff. And so right off, I thought, wow, what have I got myself into? And then they just take such a terrifying line, the most terror. I'm not a horror flick chick, so I don't like that dark stuff.
I don't
where, like, where good doesn't win out in the end. It's like I can endure the most, I have less tolerance for it anymore, the most bloody battle in a scene, as long as I know that good is winning out in the end. But it just seemed like a black hole of despair that's created around this town in Alaska and on this movie. And it was a horror movie. It didn't have anything to do with Contact as I understand it. And so this was, I think, the same kind of programming that you're talking about, Don. It's to make people be fearful and to really play and use a lot of techniques through sound and vibration and frequency to really kind of imprint gross things on people. I have to say, well, let me just say, I tried to watch World War Z with, what's his name, Brad Pitt in it, a couple of nights ago. Oh, I was like, you know what, I'm in a really good space. I'm just going to go in with an open mind because, first, I'm curious why Brad Pitt would have done this. I'm no longer curious. And I just wondered, like, what kind of, because I track consciousness through media, and that's one of the things I track and try to give indicators to people where we are with this ascension process, what's going on in our media, in all forms of media. And so I love TV shows and movies, and I'm tracking where people are as a consciousness as a whole by what they're putting out through television shows. And when I watched that, I was horrified. They are using such terrible technology in this movie to take people and shove them down in their base brain reaction of fight or flight. And it's very reptilian-based brain programming. And so it's kind of crazy that it's gotten so out of hand.
I'll skip that movie then. I really don't care for the violence. Avatar.
I love Avatar. Yeah. Avatar was an amazing movie for consciousness and allowing people to understand that there is a whole other world out there. And I've spoken in some of my radio programs when I'm sharing that I have an avatar, and it's for life-saving purposes. And this avatar is a Lyran avatar, and it exists on my ship for which I was stationed before I came and volunteered down here, which is the Phoenix. And it's an ambassador science ship, very much like the Enterprise, but not really. It's complicated, but I have an avatar up there, and they have it along with many other ways to keep me protected down here to do what I need to do. And I had to activate the avatar because those guys, I couldn't believe it, when I say those guys, the Breakaway Society had the nerve to come after me. And so it was this harrowing experience, and I'll share it sometime when it's appropriate. But the use of an avatar is very real. And in fact, I think Captain Caven talks about how they did training in some sort of avatar type thing, simulated holodeck type of a thing. But I really enjoy, and it really puts a point on that the soul is a soul, and you can take a soul from one body and put it into another body. It just happens to be technology out there that amplifies the soul and allows you to have control over an avatar thing. But there is a link, and there's a specific way it's done, and so on and so forth. And I thought it was very accurate, the movie, when it came out. I thought, oh my gosh, there is another giant leap. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of those movie producers are onto more than what they're letting on. But my major complaint about Avatar was that they seem to have too much violence and battles and explosions and noise and stuff to get Joe Sixpack into the theater. So that hopefully, I guess, the rest of the message could start to soak in. But kind of like
Einstein, there's just way too much of that still left in mainstream. We're gonna shift it.
Yeah, you can't solve a problem with the same level of thinking that created the problem. You have to solve it from a higher level. And I was just hoping through that movie that they would come up with a way where they could transcend the violence and solve the problem from a higher dimensional perspective. And I was disappointed that they did not find a way to do that in the movie. I did write a letter to James Cameron about that, with the hopes that they would come from a higher dimensional perspective in the next movie, in the sequel.
I think that's really great, and that you get involved at that level. I think that's awesome. You wrote James Cameron a letter. That's great.
I actually met him quite a number of years ago at the Mars Society convention in Boulder. he was there looking for ideas for a movie, looking for a craft, you know, ideas for a craft to send some astronauts to Mars. And, you know, there were a variety of different proposals that the different scientists and stuff were putting out. And there were, you know, 9 months in a can to get to Mars via the conventional chemical rocket technology. Actually, I know a psychologist who was working with NASA trying to find out what mix of personality types could survive for 9 months cooped up in a small capsule without somebody committing murder along the way and somebody arriving dead. And he was pretty concerned that it may not be possible. But talking to James Cameron during one of the breaks, they were talking about some of these deals where they had a capsule or chamber out on the end of a long arm to where, you know, maybe there were two of them. It was like spinning, so you had some artificial gravity, because being zero gravity for 9 months would cause all kinds of health issues. And I said, yeah, but, you know, this was, he was kind of showing the design concept he had there. I said, but we really need to put a play chamber in the middle, in the zero gravity part, where you can just go and play and swim in the air, you know, maybe have fins for your feet and paddles for your hands, where you can just kind of fly in zero gravity. You just need a place to play. And he kind of like, oh, that's a good idea. We'll see if that ever comes out. But anyway.
That's awesome. Got to get it in there with James Cameron. Good for you. Good on you, Don. That's awesome.
Let's see. There was a TV series, and I'm trying to remember the name of it, where these extraterrestrial craft crashed on Earth, and these people were living kind of up in Alaska and kind of below the radar, and just, you know, they were just existing here because their craft was destroyed. And then the government found out about them. And at first it had some pretty good themes about, you know, how we can work together and coexist peacefully, et cetera. And then I think it was about second season, it was very obvious that the Dark Cats got a hold of it, and they twisted it to a very sinister plot where they're trying to assassinate the president, and they're trying to do this and that and everything. And I just said, you know, enough of that one. That one got turned by the dark forces. You remember the name of that one, Sierra? I can't remember it right now.
No, I can't remember the name of that one. It was. I am remembering a couple of the TV shows that came out that I think.
The weekly series.
Yeah, I'm not really sure, but I know that what I've been sensing through the media is that there's been a slow progression, and there have been these slow steps in these shows that come out. And like, I know you and me, we want it to be like a certain way, like, yeah, let's go at it. Maybe let's like open things up and let's just talk about it openly and get it in the consciousness and get it away from the warring and the fighting and the same kind of consciousness has got us where we're at. But it's like each one of these programs.
V was another series that started out promising, and then
I know.
That the Dark Hats turned that one the way they wanted to create fear.
It's true. It's true. What I'm saying is that I see a progression over the years, and it's like amping up and really spreading. I think there's been a focus on, I think this is also part of the direction of the slow outcoming disclosure process that we're going through, is that more and more of this stuff is making it into our television programming, you know, on HBO and Showtime and in the movie theater. And it's these small steps and then bigger steps. And then all of a sudden it's just going to be this bigger picture, this more widely accepted view. But I think the push has been just like, let people know that it is not outside of the realm of possibility that there's other civilizations that exist out there. And so I think they've done a good job over that, because, you know, the polls say now that so many people believe, it's a very small statistic of people that don't believe, that think we're the only one. Most of the people understand and are open
like
to the
Jodie
possibility.
Foster said in the, like Jodie Foster said in the movie Contact, which is another great one. She says, if there's nobody else out there, it sure is a terrible waste of space.
I love that quote.
She was
I
so
do.
Good in that movie.
Another one from that movie is Small Moves, and that's what...
Baby Steps.
Yeah, Small Moves, like little moves, baby steps, you know, that her father would always tell her, you know, he would encourage her to slow down. Small moves is what's going to get you there. And for me, that was like the white hat sort of saying, in small moves, we're opening people a little bit by little bit, but back then I was like screaming and stomping. Like, come on, don't you get it? So for me, this is a very exciting in the last couple of years to see the dramatic leaps, not only in are we alone in the universe, but so many other things that people have needed to be woken up from, their bigotry, their hatred, you know, for each other, and on so many different levels. Like last night I was watching the Golden Globe Awards, and I found out, because I haven't been watching TV lately, that there is a new television show called Transparent, and it's about the transgender community. And last year in the Grammys, there was this big thing about gays and equal rights and marriage and all this whole thing, and there's for the first time a artist that won 9 Grammys off of an album that was independently released and not under a label, major label, which is huge. People are starting to break away from these groups that have been keeping them in the dark, and they're creating ways to do that. Like the internet made these people, Macklemore and Ryan Lewis is who I'm referring to. Their number one song talked about LGBT awareness. And so now we're moving in the transgendered realm, and we've got really famous actors dedicating their Golden Globe last night to the transgender community. And I just was like, whoa! And I was like texting people. I'm like, oh my gosh, here's another big one. It's like everywhere we're turning around, people are waking up, and it's like this pop, and it's popping. And ever since 2012 and the convection oven that we were put in, and containment and all the different things I've talked about over the last couple of years, the energy had to get really high, and things are popping now, and they're popping at a greater rate. You know, right before the popcorn's ready, it starts to just pop, pop. We've been doing that for a few years, and now it's like pop, 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 pop. Like, what's going to happen next?
No, that was Folger's
coffee,
wasn't
it? It's awesome. Yeah, exactly.
I know how hard it is for independent artists to get their works out into the mainstream. You know, probably back, what was it, in the 40s, 50s, 60s, there were the payola scandals where the record companies were paying the radio stations to put their music on the air so that people would buy those albums, and that was outlawed.
Yeah, it
but
didn't
it's,
change.
It's really,
that,
it didn't
change. No, it didn't
come back
change.
In
just,
more
they're
subtle
still
ways.
Doing the same thing. Yeah.
And independent artists, it's almost impossible to get into the mainstream media and onto the radio stations. I've got some good friends. Their group name is Twin Flame. It's Wynn Bowley and Rebecca Hilton. And I think her voice is right up there on a par with Enya or Sarah Brightman. I mean, she is absolutely astounding. And yet they cannot break through into the public awareness because they cannot get any airtime. So if anybody's interested in good music of the Enya type or Sarah Brightman type genre, I highly recommend you look them up on the internet and get some of their albums. There's one of my favorite, Peaceful Warriors. It has an incredible message, and her voice is just so pure and clean that it's just really worth looking those up.
Neat. Definitely check into that. But it's really important that, you know, the internet through YouTube made this a sensation of Macklemore. You know, when their YouTube videos are getting 2 million, 4 million, 10 million, 20 million hits, it's like the major labels couldn't keep that kind of voice of the people back.
Why do you think they want to create a fast lane and a slow lane on the internet so they can keep the independent media down?
Yes.
That's why net neutrality and turning it into a public utility to where they cannot clamp down on certain content, but where, you know, everything has to have equal access is so important.
It really
is. Important. And actually, there was a deal in San Francisco just a few months ago. There was some kind of a big protest or something going on, and the police were afraid there was going to be a flash mob or something like that, and they literally shut down the cell phone communications, the texts and data and voice, and they literally clamped down on any conversations about whatever the topic was that was going on at the time. That was kind of a trial run to see if they could control the public's ability to communicate rapidly about current events. That's a very dangerous precedent. What they need to do is govern correctly, lead with principle to where the people follow, that they will, you know, work with the government rather than feeling that the government's there to oppose their ability to succeed.
I appreciate that point of view, and I come with the opposite, and I feel like that people need to stand up and let their voice be heard and demand change.
Well, that,
and do
that too. Yeah. They need to demand
whatever
change.
It
the government
takes.
Needs to represent the people, and if they represented the people and did what was right, then there wouldn't be any concern about conflict. But the problem is that in order to do what's right for the people, the government has to stand up to the cabal, the puppet masters of the world. And I think that's
correct.
Why...
And it's done through people. And that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to get everybody in all aspects of who's been involved in the pulling of the puppet strings to wake up and not tolerate and turn in their puppet master and get people aware, and things can move really quickly and peacefully. There doesn't need to be violence, but we need to be the ones who rise up and say no more, because we're at a gap right here. And the gap is that we're waking up and we're realizing we're being lied to, mm-hmm. and that through our apathy and our consumerism and our being dumbed down by everything that dumbs us down, we became complacent and we let these people do whatever they wanted to. And we didn't stand up for a long time. Now people are standing up. And so we're in this giant gap of waking up and then having this monster have gotten away with us. So we are going to need to try to create. And what our job is how do we gap that? How do we get, you know, we can't just stand there and scream over the gap at, you know, you guys suck and you lie to us and you've got to represent the people. Well, we need to get the people that'll be that, who are that, over there into those places of representation.
Some of our national leaders have gone in, you know, with great hopes and saying they were going to do this, that, and the other thing, and then they get in office and they get sat down and they get their little lecture about this is the way it really works. You don't really run the country. We run the country and you do what we tell you to, or you'll wind up like Jack Kennedy or Abraham Lincoln or whatever. And I think they probably threaten their kids as much as anything, because it's one thing if they threaten you and you can kind of take that risk and stand toe-to-toe with them. But when they threaten to do awful things to your kids, that's a whole other level psychologically. And I think they've used that for a long time to control our supposed leaders.
Yeah, and there's a day of reckoning for the people who have bent to that. But we've got some really wonderful warriors that are jumping out there through the different ways, different avenues, and saying, you can't keep this information secret anymore. You know, the whistleblowers. And now it's the people's job in knowing that there's a responsibility in knowing. And so we have got this gap of they've completely misused our trust. There's a balance of us not watching the big guys or whatever it is, but really it's us. There's a 99% literally has all the power in the world, and we act as if we don't. We could have this whole government at its knees in a week if we organize properly. And I mean organize by not participating. Do not pump that fuel. Do not go into that work. Do not participate in the programs. Just for a week, just a week, we would have the government at its knees begging us, what do you want us to do? You've completely halted everything. That's how Switzerland won its independence again. Each one of the different world governments have been going through their own inner revolution. And what's happening is that the people are waking up enough to say, enough. We're not going to tolerate this anymore. And through their different ways all over the world, they have won their governments back. The United States has not done that.
Iceland is a great example. Their banking system was taken over by the international bankers, and they started doing all of these highly leveraged trades, et cetera, and they basically bankrupt the country. And then they wanted the citizens to, you know, take on these austerity measures and pay higher taxes to bail out the banks. And the citizens said no. And it was hard on them for a couple of years as they kind of got their feet back under them. But they rejected that whole international banking cartel. They created their own currency again, and they lifted themselves up by the bootstraps, and now they're becoming quite a success story. So it is possible.
Yes, absolutely.
But how much do you see about that in our media? Not much.
Our media is starting to lose credibility by the minute. Like we talked about last week, you know, Fox News has still not gotten Dish's approval to be on the air and its affiliate.
Oh, really?
And these are extreme right groups. Fox News above all of them is the one that all of the alternative medias and stuff like that, and not even so much alternative anymore. Like Jon Stewart has taken on his own campaign against Fox News from Comedy Central. And I love his nightly digest. And he just has single-handedly made an ass out of all of the Fox News affiliates, and Dish dropped them. And then Fox got mad and they said, why'd you drop us? And Dish was like, your numbers are really low. Why would we keep you?
Well, they spent enormous amounts of money trying to, I mean, they lost money for the first 8 or 10 years. I can't remember exactly how many years, but for quite a number of years, they were losing money, but they were getting this pumped in because they were the propaganda arm of the Republican Party. And they didn't care if they lost money. They were pumping this message out. It's the Goebbels theory, the big lie. You tell a lie often enough, you make it ridiculous enough, you know, such a big lie that people think, well, they wouldn't say that if it wasn't true, but that's really crazy. But then you hear it seven times, and your mind says, oh, well, I've heard it so many times, it must be true. And so that's their theory, is just keep pumping the lies out until people believe them, and they have created a whole... They've been proven wrong. Over 50% of their facts are wrong. You know,
yeah.
the stuff they put out is fact. And it's all to create a false reality, and it's very deliberate,
yep.
and it's interesting that they've been kicked off the Dish Network. I love it.
Well, yeah, it's like this huge movement now against Fox, which has been brilliant. And somebody even sent me something, some alternative news blog spot or something was kind of busting their jaws again. This blogger said he was on the airplane. He was an ex-Marine. He was sitting next to an ex-Marine, and he was sitting next to another gentleman. I can't remember who he was about. And they got into a pleasant conversation on the trip, and then towards the end of the trip, one guy turns, this average dude turns to the military guy and the blogger and says, oh, by the way, did you hear that Obama is disbanding the Marines? And so this journalist
like
was like, what?
Kind of thing.
Exactly. He
yeah.
said that he went in and he started looking into just the absolute asinine things that Fox News talk about. That to
mm-hmm.
a normal person, if you were just to watch news, like if you hadn't watched Fox for a while, then you just tuned in, how just absurd it would sound. And he said that when he tuned in on one fact, because he started hearing some odd things, like he wanted to find out, is there any validity? Is there some bill being passed? Because he had to research every angle, is the president really shutting the Marines down? And it came back to some weird propaganda thing that they were doing that wasn't based in any kind of reality. It was like a spin they put on it. And then he brought it back around to where he said, like, they said that Obama outlaws trans fat. And he said, people, this is ridiculous. Why are you listening to this stuff? All he said is that it's illegal and it was written into a bill and it was supposed to be passed through the FDA. And so it's like they're being exposed for absolutely how absurd they are.
Well, they had the deal recently where they were talking about the cops that had shot a couple of these kids. And the person at the protest was saying something, and they very carefully edited, till we won't stop till we kill a cop. Well, that's absolutely not what the guy said, but they edited the words to make it sound like that. And so they made it look like these people were promoting violence against the police. And then those cops did get shot in New York, maybe because of the propaganda, the way Fox News had edited and put that idea out there. You know, it's illegal to put propaganda out to the American people. That's why Air America down in Florida, that was beaming radio signals towards Cuba, had to very carefully shape their signal so that people in Florida couldn't hear it, because the propaganda they were sending to Cuba was illegal to be heard in the United States. And yet Fox News has somehow worked its way around this limitation and just kind of, you know, like the camel's nose in the tent, you know, it's gradually gotten into where they are absolutely brainwashing, propagandizing people to where they've got their trigger words, Benghazi, you know, and people know what that means, or Fast and Furious, and, you know, these people just snap to like it's a hypnotic programming thing. So,
yeah,
it's people have got to wake up to understand that and get their news from more independent sources. One of my favorites is Democracy Now!, where they will spend sometimes a whole hour on one subject, or, you know, they'll have the headlines, and then they may have two or three main stories that they go into in depth. And it's true investigative reporting, and that's so rare on the mainstream media anymore. So.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of great sources, and they're popping up daily, and they're continuing to pop up as people are waking up. And the whole point that I want to bring back around to complete this thought process so we can move on, because I certainly don't want to spend any more time or energy on Fox, is that people as a whole, I mean, if people wouldn't have started waking up, okay, if what started this whole chain of events with this Fox thing and Dish being able to stand up and say, we're not going to host you anymore because your numbers are down? This was the people. The people started turning Fox off.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so since we are still living in a capitalist type of a corporation run everything, here is the first steps of what it also looks like for a corporation to make conscious decisions. So there's going to be a balancing of people withdrawing their support in mass scale and switching the tides of the way things are going. And that's when I say people have all of the power. We can just wake up and
we'll
stop
get into that
participating
one of the,
in these things.
We'll get into that in one of the upcoming chapters. What's the best way to fight them? It's not to fight them. It's to enlighten them, to uplift them. And we'll talk about that in much more detail here in one of the upcoming lessons. I also want to say briefly, I was thinking about this while you were talking earlier, on the TV shows and stuff, we've got like Ancient Aliens on the, I think it's History Channel.
Oh, yeah.
It's not perfect, but it's much better than in the past. In the past, they'd have these documentaries, and they'd have, you know, somebody who had a positive experience, and then they'd kind of subtly ridicule them, and they'd provide balance. They always had to have balance. They had to have the abduction case, and then they had to have the cattle mutilation case for balance. And, you know, it's like the 3% or so of the global climate scientists who believe that global warming is not real, and those are the ones that are funded by the fossil fuel industry. So they're paid to say it's not real. But they always seem to give them 50% of the airtime for balance. But we need to get beyond that and understand that the science is real and, you know, follow the money. Where are these guys getting paid and why are they saying what they're saying?
Absolutely. So, you know, there's people listening. Nobody has a question or comment as of yet. So what maybe we can do is move on to the next aspect of the, what would be the next thing, the meditation?
Yeah, I think that covered most of the rest of the stuff. Was there anything else in the notes you saw that we need to cover before we get into the meditation?
Nope, I think that's it. And then get people coming along here and week after week. This is only our second week. So as someone who's been doing the radio shows for a while, there's definitely an ebb and flow in participation. And this is only our second week, so I encourage you, Don. Things are going to be brighter for you to have people to talk to in the coming weeks. So we encourage people to call in and interact with us week after week.
Okay. Maybe we should talk just a little bit about what meditation is, what its beneficial effects are for people, and then we'll go into a very simple breathing meditation. There have been many scientific studies, and you can find a lot of information on the Internet. Maharishi University has a number of scientific studies talking about the benefits of meditation in a wide variety of ways, not only things like lowering your blood pressure or even cholesterol, reducing stress, etc. So there's physical benefits. There's also mental benefits. It actually helps wire the brain more effectively. It helps make connections better. You'll find that your intuition improves. You'll start to be able to make connections to higher dimensional levels more easily. And just a wide variety of benefits that can come from meditation. Sierra, have you got any other perspectives on just what general meditation is good for?
Yes, actually reconnection. As I understand it, it's just basically shutting down the loops and the processes and the constant noise that's going on in your mind so that you can tap into other things and you can take that focus and direct it wherever you want.
Mm-hmm. And I'm also me. I'm always doing something. I'm taking a Coursera course, which is Coursera, Coursera.com. It's a consortium of universities around the world that put on these kind of Reader's Digest condensed version of college courses massively on the Internet for free. And I've taken one on astrobiology, one on philosophy, one on becoming a more effective writer, which I was hoping would help me with, you know, little things like punctuation and grammar for my writing, so I didn't have to rely as much on an editor to help with some of that. Let's see, what else did I take? I took one on safeguarding our digital democracy, which was about the electronic voting machines and how easy they are to hack. University of Michigan computer science team hacked into one that the government was going to use for the service people overseas to allow them to vote via the Internet.
Right.
But they did a very smart thing. They opened it up to the legitimate computer science security firms to try and hack into it and see if there were any weaknesses. Well, it took this University of Michigan team all of just an hour or two to break into the thing, and they totally changed the vote. Aaron Burr won the election. They every time a vote was cast, the Michigan State fight song would play. they showed how ridiculously easy it is to totally manipulate the elections, which I think has been going on for a long time. And, you know, all they got to do is get it close enough, they can steal it. And we really need to go back to paper ballots that can be counted and verified, at least until we come to a whole new order of magnitude of computer security, because right now it's just computer voting is giving viruses the right to vote. So anyway, the one I'm taking right now is on learning how to learn. And one of the things they talk about is if you, you know, there's two basic modes of learning, the most prominent. There's more, the two main ones are the focused mode where you focus intently, you concentrate, you're trying to, you know, read and figure out a process, whether it's a mathematical formula or a physics principle or whatever, you're really focused on it. But then you also need to go back to the diffuse mode, the kind of more relaxed mode of study, to allow your subconscious to make connections with other things that you've learned in the past and to figure out how to apply this principle to whatever you're trying to do. So they recommend that you, you know, if you're studying intently, you only do that for 25 or 30 minutes, and then you take a short break and kind of let your mind relax. Maybe take a walk or a bicycle ride or go swimming or something for a short while and get your mind a little bit back from the subject and just let it work in the more subconscious background, and it'll start making connections. Your highly focused short-term memory only has room for about four things at once. And if you're trying to cram too much in, you just overload short-term memory and it just keeps bouncing off and it can't go anywhere. But what you need to do is integrate that into your long-term memory, correlate it with other things, and then when it drops into the long-term memory, there's more room in the short-term memory for the next subject. So that's part of what meditation does, is it allows you to get into a state where your mind can relax and correlate what's going on or what you're thinking about, what you're meditating on or the events of the day or whatever. Can let them sink into the deeper levels, connect with the things that they correlate with, develop, they call it chunking. You create a chunk of information that relates to this one thing and a chunk of information that relates to another principle or subject and whatever, and you kind of put it in its little pigeonholes, and then with some review over the next week or so, not necessarily every day, but maybe first, second, third day, and then give a day off and then go back and review again, but give a day or two between, but review a little bit for a week or two, and that really locks the connections into your long-term memory to where it sticks. So there's some interesting concepts about the way we learn, but meditation is also very integral to all of that. So if we are ready, let's do a very simple breathing meditation. Some people may have their own techniques, and they're welcome to use those, but I'm going to build on this simple breathing meditation throughout the course. So let's just settle in, if it's possible. Find a chair, relatively upright, relatively firm chair, a big soft bark lounger or something is not the best. Sitting up with your hands on your legs, palms down, and your feet separated without your feet or hands crossed. If you cross your arms or your legs, it'll kind of short-circuit the energy. So you want to be sitting relatively upright, feet apart, hands on your thighs, and just start breathing slowly and deeply. And inhale slowly and deeply, and then pause for as long as it's comfortable. And then exhale slowly and deeply, and pause. Just continue that for about 7 breaths. People find that for the energy flow, it's better to inhale through the nose and exhale through the mouth. And it's important to pause for as long as it's comfortable between each breath cycle. Because as you do this, you'll start to notice in the pause between the breaths, there's a deep, profound silence. Just momentary at first. With each breath and each pause, try and expand that moment of deep, profound silence slightly longer each breath. Inhale and pause. Exhale slowly and deeply, and pause. With practice, And it's not necessarily going to happen the first time. But with practice, you'll get to the point where you can expand that deep, profound silence through the entire breath cycle. And that silence is your connection with the cosmic consciousness. Inhale and pause. Now you may find yourself distracted by sounds that you hear, maybe the sound of my voice, but think in terms of how it is that you were able to perceive that as you're breathing, focusing on the breath going in and out of your body, and in that silence between the breaths, focus on how it is that we are able to perceive. Not what you're perceiving, because you tend to fight that. You tend to try and push the sound out of your mind. But instead, focus on how it is that we are awake and aware and conscious and able to perceive. What is that basic fundamental awareness? Just let yourself settle into that thought and let it roll around gently in your mind as you continue to focus on the breath. In through the nose and out through the mouth. What is this thing called perception, called consciousness? I'm going to give you just about 2 or 3 minutes of silence to think on that. And when you're ready, just gently start to return to a normal consciousness. No hurry. Just focus on your breathing. Gradually become more aware of what's around you. Take your time. Most people, especially at first, find it hard to quiet the brain. When they get quiet, there's all kinds of thoughts start pinging around inside their head. And then they try and force them out, or they try and force it to be quiet, and that never works. So again, a much better technique is to consider that as an example of your ability to be aware. And then contemplate how it is that we are aware. And that shifts it rather than fighting it. So your homework assignment for this week is to do basic meditation, preferably 15 or 20 minutes a night, at least 2 or 3 nights a week this week, maybe four or five if you're up to it. If you have another meditation technique that works for you, you can use that. As I'm leading the group through the meditations, I'll be using the breathing exercise as a basis. Try and do this two or three times at least this week. It's kind of like exercising your muscles. It takes a little while to develop. But I can just about guarantee you that after, say 8 or 10 sessions, you'll start to notice a difference. You may start to notice that your intuition is better or that your senses are more perceptive. You see colors more vividly or you hear a greater depth of sound, maybe in a symphony. You'll hear more of the individual instruments and the counter melodies and the depth as well as the width of the sound scene. You just start to become more perceptive in a variety of different ways. So I highly encourage you to give that a try and keep it up. But just this very simple meditation, the breathing meditation, and focusing, becoming aware of awareness. That's all we have to do this week. There's no other big fancy problem to solve or anything like that. Just become aware of awareness in that silence between the breaths.
Perfect. Ah, that was really great. I love taking the time. I especially love participating in group meditation. And I like it when other people lead it. But I can just go and, tap in. And I always come back from it feeling really grounded and connected again to Source and to Gaia and to all the things that are important to me. So thank you so much for leading us in that, Don. I really appreciate it.
Yep, as we go on, more dimensions to the meditation. We'll connect with the earth. We'll put our roots down into the earth and connect and ground in that way. We'll add more dimensions to it as we go along. But for the first week, especially for the beginners, just simply becoming aware of awareness in that silence between the breath is plenty for the first week. And they'll get profound results from just that.
Absolutely. As I did when you instructed me to do so way back when.
Coming up next week. The second chapter in my book is called In the Beginning. Basically, we're going to talk about our early years, how they shape our worldview, and how we react to various high strangeness results as a result of our upbringing. Were our parents supportive of outside-the-box thinking, or were they fearful? Was it a very fear-based upbringing, or was it a open, explorative type upbringing? We'll talk about how it might affect your readiness and your reactions to a UFO or ET encounter, how we can better prepare ourselves for potential contact and for the ascension. See, we already talked somewhat about science fiction movies. I would hope that some of the listeners have some comments as they think about that this week, chime in about some of the movies they've seen and what they thought, how it affected them, and how they thought the message was slanted, what they thought the agenda was. We're going to talk about our early years. So I, again, hope we get a lot of audience participation next week.
Perfect. And I would just encourage people, if you have listened to this radio show and you dig it, you are into what we're creating here, share it on your Facebook, share it, tweet it, let people know, email it to people, especially if you feel like that they might get something out of the kind of conversation that we're creating here on becoming a cosmic citizen. So thank you so much, Don, for putting this all together and creating all of these things for us. You have any closing up, wrapping up comments before I get into my announcements about stuff?
Well, I just, like I said in my email to you a little earlier today, I can't think of anybody better to be there to assist your grandmother as she moves into the light and into the higher dimensions.
Thank you, my friend. I really appreciate
you. You are
going to
be
that.
A very calming and peaceful influence as she moves into the light, and we wish her well in her journeys.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I'm just so grateful that I can be present with her and that she's, her body's shutting down, but she's coherent. And so we laugh and we talk and we share stories. And then I help her through the painful places. And, it's got a lot of pain in her body. And then we just continue our life review and sharing time and sharing conversation. And we'll keep doing that until she's ready to transition. I'm just grateful that I get to be here and do that with her. I'm very close with my grandmother. Shared a lot of the years that when I got reunited with my biological family after going through the foster care system and stuff, spending time with her, talking with her, and it was so cute. She calls me her favorite, and she doesn't care who she says that to. Like, I heard her tell them of my cousins. I was like, Grandma, you know, but it's cute, and I love her, and we love to watch television programs together, and I laugh a lot because I really do enjoy the supernatural and programming that has to do with the supernatural. So always been into werewolves, witches, and, you know, vampire-type, trilogy-type things and writings. Not the real dark stuff. I don't like that. But I like the more light things and the more creative, and especially the more accurate. I think it's really fun to watch. But I blame that on my grandmother, who is the Celtic lineage of the Celtic side of my half-Celtic and half-Cherokee blood that runs through me. So there's a deep respect for the magical with the Celtic people. And she very much practices in touch with her own Wiccan side. And so there's a lot of, they believe in a lot of magic, fairy tale and gnomes and just anything can be created. And she reminds me of the sprite, you know, they're really playful, very, very much still very playful and wanting to have conversations about the fantastical, which is awesome. And
she probably has a pretty good idea what's coming, and you can help make it a joyous occasion.
Yep.
Celebrate her life and celebrate her moving on to bigger and better things.
Absolutely. She's excited about assisting with Ascension from the other side. She's like, I'm not going to disappear. I'm going to be hanging around and helping folks out.
Okay, well.
So, and Ida wouldn't doubt it. All righty. Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you, Don. I really appreciate that.
Oh, you bet.
Okay, well, just a couple other announcements then about a few other things. Like I mentioned earlier in the broadcast, I will be having Captain K, a.k.a. Randy Kramer, on with me tomorrow evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to 10 p.m. I'm going to be interviewing him, hopefully compiling an interview that it doesn't go over the same information, maybe just touching on or highlighting on the important points, but getting into the gritty of some things that he hasn't quite talked about yet pertaining to his mission on Mars and the Earth Defense Force and the Mars Defense Force. And so please tune into that. If you want to ask Randy questions live, this is a really great opportunity. I'm not sure that he's been on a talk program yet where people have had direct access to asking him live questions. So any other interview I've ever met was pre-recorded and released to the general public. So spread it around, folks. I'm going to be putting that show page up at the beginning of tomorrow and then reminding people again that we're going to be going on live with Randy tomorrow evening. So join us here. Blog Talk Radio, A Galactic Perspective with Sierra Nablina. I think I'm going to go ahead and sign up for the evening. The music credit for tonight's episode, the beginning was Read All About It, Part 3 with Emily Sandy, available on iTunes. And I'm going to close out with Light Up the Sky with Christina Aguilera, available on iTunes. All right, you all have a great night. We will talk to you, see you on the airwaves tomorrow. Thanks so much, Don, for being with us. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been fun.
We are the stars up in the sky. We let the darkness you and I. We are the flicker in the night. Never shine so bright. We are the strong and though we fall. We fought for love, we risked it all. Never back down against the wall. What are we living for? Keep right on high. Right up to my heart.
Thank you all. And thanks again, Don. I've got you on live on the air if you're still with us. Thank you so much for being with us this evening. This is a fun night of creating, becoming a cosmic citizen with you.
Yep, I'm still here. So looking forward to carrying this on. It's going to take probably at least 3 months to get through all the material, and we've got an awful lot of material for people to learn. So really looking forward to it. Mm-hmm.
Me too. All right, my friend. Good night.
See you next week.
All right.
Have you or your loved ones ever experienced change of any kind? Ever?
Oh, yeah.
Ever had a growth spurt? Made a friend?
Hello.
Ate a sandwich? Seen a rainbow? Taken a lover? Visited the gym?
Hey, bro.
If you answered yes to any of these life changes, call itbed.com. ItBed by Sleep Number. It's a bed that changes, invented because your bed doesn't change.
Please don't actually call the itbed.com website because it's not possible to call a website.
Right now, save 60% off absolutely everything at Gap Factory and Banana Republic Factory at our biggest sale of the year. That's right, 60% off everything in stores and online. Save big with sweaters for adults from $14.99 at Gap Factory. And at Banana Republic Factory, doorbuster sweaters start at $19.99. Hurry, these prices won't last. Search our store locator for your nearest Gap Factory and Banana Republic Factory store or shop us online.